Thanks, David. So tonight we complete our four-message series called Friction, which is really looking at the importance of the relationships that we have with each other and the way that our meaningful relationship with people, there is a necessary pressure that is always going to exist within meaningful relationship. For a lot of relationships that don't have meaning or aren't significant, there's probably less likely to be pressure or certainly long-term pressure. But certainly for relationships that matter, there is always going to be the possibility of pressure and therefore the possibility of friction. And we need to learn how to navigate this friction, how to navigate this pressure, because if we don't learn how to navigate the significant relationships in our life, we can end up in all sorts of trouble and carrying all sorts of hurt that God never intended us to carry. And this is the critical part when it comes to anything to do with relationships between ourselves and each other. It is coming back to that question, what is God's ideal from the beginning for me? What does it look like to actually pursue the kind of relationship with others that God originally intended? And this isn't going to be just about behavior management. This isn't just going to be about doing the right thing. In fact, that's not what God is on about at all. He's just saying, if you choose to live my way, if you choose to pursue my way, you are going to find a thriving that I intended for you from the beginning. And that is why what I'm going to talk about tonight is so essential. This concept of making peace the priority, because sometimes it isn't the priority. In fact, we come up with all kinds of ways to avoid it becoming a priority or pushing things either above it or pushing it down below. I'll deal with that later. And yet, at the same time, if we don't deal with the kind of conflict and friction that exists within our lives, we end up carrying the burden of weight that God never intended us to carry. But before I kind of get into the text today from Matthew chapter 5, which is just an awesome text, by the way, I want to talk a little bit about campfires. Now, I grew up not in Alice Springs. I've only been in Alice Springs a touch over 6 years, but certainly the concept of fire was definitely a part of my lived experience. I grew up in West Gippsland, which is in Victoria, and we lived on 3.25 acres, which isn't a huge space, but certainly enough to have a bit of a paddock and to have a few fruit trees and all this kind of stuff. And one of the things that my dad was really great at was controlling fire, at least for the most part. He was a very competent fire creator. I remember at one point we had a couple of these giant gum trees that sat beside our property, these huge gum trees. They were becoming a hazard to our house because they were starting to drop limbs, and so we had to get someone in to cut them down. What we ended up with is these giant kind of the base of the trunk, you know, this would extend up to a kind of a meter high and these huge kind of root systems that who know how long that they would go. And I remember one of these particular trees or these kind of trunks base had been hollowed out by white ants, right? And this is obviously one of the reasons why we had to have it felled. But it became this kind of natural little fireplace, right? So we would light fires within this giant trunk and we would slowly burn away the edge. I remember my dad with his axe and he would start hacking at the side of this thing. And we would have fire after fire after fire. I'm talking like 5, 6, 7, 8 fires trying to work our way down this trunk to get it to essentially ground level and functional space. But the thing that would always surprise me was, like I said, I lived in Western Victoria, which means that many a day were cold. And certainly the days we were doing this were cold days. And so we would have this fire in this trunk, so to speak. It would all burn down. And I remember sleeping overnight, getting up in the morning and going to that trunk and just seeing the ash on the ground. I remember seeing the ash and going, okay, I suppose we're going to have to start another fire to keep this going on. And yet my dad, and many of you would know this, he would have this ability to just kind of dig in there and throw some ash, and there would be this tiny little simmering like piece of spark or ash or ember there, like the tiniest possible thing. And somehow he would turn that little ember, and he would never throw petrol on it, he would never chuck paper on it. He would somehow manage to cultivate that tiny little spark and get it roaring up again for another day. And we know that this is true because we're here in Alice Springs. Whenever we go camping, what's one of the big rules of camping? You have a fire, you make sure it goes out, right? Because the reason that we have a lot of bushfires is not just from lightning strikes. It's also because people don't put out their fires. And these fires that maybe we absolutely douse in water, right? Like just douse in water, and then we chuck sand on top of that, and then we douse it on top of that with water as well. Still, even overnight, it's amazing how you can get up, dig under there, turn over some soil, and there's still an ember. There's still an ember. There is still heat. And the danger of these situations, if you've never done it before, is that you cover it in sand and then you accidentally walk over that space. And if you're not careful, you suddenly do get some lovely burning sensations on the bottom of your feet for something that looks absolutely gone. Because this is the truth. Fire does not quench easily. And it's amazing how just the smallest little ember, the smallest little spark can reignite into something huge with just enough oxygen and just enough fuel. Now, the same is true of the conflict that exists between us. Sometimes we have conflict with each other, and what we really want to do is we just want to bury it, right? If I cover this thing in sand, if I give it enough time, if I douse this thing in water, eventually it will fade away. Maybe. But most of the time, what ends up happening is that something, a bit of oxygen, a bit of fuel, a little bit of a dig into something that we thought was maybe long gone, stirs up a little ember. And suddenly that thing that we didn't realize we were carrying starts flaming up inside of us again, because we've never done the work of reconciling, of working through and doing diligence to that conflict. And this is why what Jesus has to share with us through Matthew chapter 5 today is so important. Very few people intend to start a bushfire, okay? But they can so easily happen if we don't address the core issue. And so you might be sitting here tonight, you might be joining us online. Here's two classic ways that I'm calling heat avoidance. Sometimes we are the offender. We are the one who has hurt someone else. We have said a harsh word. We have done something to oppress someone else. And the temptation for us in terms of this heat avoidance is just to wait for the conflict to simmer out. If I give it enough time, if I give it enough space, eventually it will be forgotten. And see, this is the problem with this kind of mentality, is occasionally that happens. But actually, most of the time, we're just waiting for that trigger. And we reignite that story when maybe something similar happens again. The other kind of position we might have when it comes to conflict is we might be the offended party. We might have been offended by someone else. Somebody else has deeply hurt us. They've cut to our core, or they've done something to kind of put us out. And instead of seeking forgiveness or seeking to resolve that conflict, it's just too painful, right? I want this conflict to hurt less. I want it to be less kind of flary when I address it. And I want to acknowledge that there are times for that, right? There are times when we do need to wait. We need to ensure that there is kind of some emotional stability so that we can engage in that well. But we can use this as an excuse, again, to avoid seeking after peace. I just want it not to hurt. And again, time becomes our ally, right? If I just leave it long enough, eventually the heat will come out of this. The conflict will hurt less, and then it will be done with. But again, this is more so an illusion than anything, because some little bit of oxygen, a little word, a little situation, and that all comes back to a roaring fire. So if you've got your Bible with me, I invite you to turn with me to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to be looking at just a couple of passages in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount that speak to the offense as the offender and both as the offended, and how Jesus says you need to deal with this sooner rather than later. Here's the passage. Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 22. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Whew, Mr. T's in trouble. That's an old reference. Whenever I see that, I always think of you fool. This is a really fascinating passage, right? Because you kind of got Jesus going from this concept of murder. Now, we know that murder was one of the Ten Commandments. Do not murder. You know, that's not a good thing. And then he's kind of said, okay, well, actually, the heart behind this kind of command not to murder is actually something far deeper. It's about our relationships with each other. And so let's talk about anger. And suddenly when he talks about anger, he starts to talk about judgment. And then he starts to talk about hell. And you're like, whoa, where did that go so fast? I mean, we'll talk about murder, and then I'm like, okay, I can deal with anger, but then suddenly anger, like in danger of the fire of hell, like how did that escalate so quickly? And this is like a critical part of Jesus' teaching all the way through, which is when it comes to conflict, when it comes to anger, when it comes to the hurt that we are either a recipient of or we extend toward others, this is a heart issue. Conflict is always a heart issue, all right? Jesus is saying, I don't want you to experience what God never created you to experience. And so let's get off the whole, I haven't murdered anyone train, therefore I feel good about myself. And actually, let's get to the heart of the issue, which is the way that we relate to each other. Because if you are setting the standard of relationship with your partner or with your friend that you haven't murdered each other, then that's probably not going to actually produce healthy relationship, yeah? And so Jesus kind of changes it and says, this is what we're getting on about. I want to talk about anger. And like I said, it's always a heart issue. Now, it could be, right, that you feel kind of like somebody has said something, it kind of feels like it's in your mind, or somebody has physically done something to offend you, and you might be physically hurt. But even with these head and these kind of hands kind of gestures, it still always impacts our heart. That is where the lasting damage in most cases occurred. You could even kind of call this the eternal kind of damage factor. You see, how we navigate conflict, it does shape people's identity. It shapes people's sense of worth. It shapes the courage that they have to engage in every other part of life, depending on how that conflict has affected them, or you might even say you. This is always a heart issue. And so when Jesus says, if you call your brother or sister a raka, this is a word that simply means worthless or empty, right? And we kind of have a laugh about this sense of someone saying, oh, you fool, and be in danger of the fire of hell. It's like, what? Like, seriously, we say that kind of stuff all the time. And Jesus is saying, wait, wait, wait. You need to understand that there is something occurring under the surface here, a certain kind of heat that if you don't acknowledge it, there is big, big implications. If you leave this unaddressed, you are literally playing with fire. That's what Jesus is saying here. And so we need to be extra aware that whether we are the offender or the offended, right? Both parties, offender or the offended, all conflict will keep producing heat if left unaddressed. This is what conflict does, and this is what Jesus wants to caution the people about. It's not enough not to murder. There is something else going on. And I love how Jesus is about to frame this up within the context of worship, right? He's about to frame it up within the context of worshiping God, because I think it highlights just how important this truth is, and that a faith itself is not some sort of kind of fire blanket that we can just kind of put over it in order to deal with this kind of conflict. And so first, I want to talk from two different perspectives. First, I want to talk from the offender perspective. He continues in Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 to 24. Therefore, so in light of this, in light of the fact that, hey, the murder thing is actually about the state of relationships between each other, and that anger and that raka and that you fool can actually put you in danger of the fires of hell, massive, massive consequences. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift. So it's really important to understand that right here in verses 23 to 24, we are encouraged to take on the perspective of the offender. It says that if your brother or sister has something against you, right? That means that you have done something and they are holding something against you because you were the offender. And it's saying, while you're in that space, while you're honoring God, while you're stepping into that in their context, that kind of temple offering kind of space, you could equally equate that with any kind of spiritual environment here today as you're stepping into church, as you're about to declare that first word in that worship song, whatever it looks like. As you go to offer your gift to God, Jesus says you need to stop. You need to stop. Leave your gift there. And go and be reconciled to your brother or sister. And I think this is absolutely fascinating, because for us, much of our mentality, particularly as Christians, is like, as long as I'm right with God, like that's the big deal. And that is a big deal. Of course, it's a big deal. But Jesus does this deliberately to flip people's perspective and to highlight the significance and the importance of our relationships with each other, because our relationships with each other are actually a core part of the gospel as well. In fact, in order for us to be truly right with God is actually going to take a certain amount of reconciliation with each other as well. And I love right here. It's like you are so close to being right to God, but stop. Jesus says, I need you to shift your priorities in that moment. Before getting right with God, we need to get right with others. And this is like, this, I can just imagine, particularly the religious people of the day and maybe even people here today, you know, there's a sense of kind of going, what? Like, seriously? No. Our relationship with God is the one thing that matters. Well, it does, and it informs everything else. But if we are seeking to have a relationship with God, but we're not reconciled to each other, if we're not reconciled to our inner self, if we're not reconciled to our broken world, then actually our relationship with God is only going to be relatively superficial. Because his way was always about our actions and about how we engage with this world, how we embrace what it means to be created as he created us to live. The gospel, the good news, is holistic. It's not just about us and God. It's about fostering and restoring relationships with each other too. And so I know something that I'm deeply challenged by, and I do this on a regular basis when I'm not too busy, and it's my own fault for being too busy. We can all be guilty of that. But it's so significant for me, even on a Sunday, as I step into a church environment where there's so much to do, is to actually pause at the door and ask the question, is there anyone who I have offended this week? Is there anything that has been left unresolved? Are there any little embers that are still burning below the surface? And maybe I've made the excuse, I'll deal with that next week or whatever it might be. But is there anything going on that I need to address before I offer my gift to God? And I'll encourage you to consider that yourself as well. As you step into a church service, as you step into a ministry opportunity, is there anything that right now is just burning under the surface, an ember that I've left lying around? And this is important to understand. It's not that the offering isn't important. Remember in the text it says, go and be reconciled to your brother and sister and then go and offer your gift, okay? So this isn't kind of a substituting one for the other. Jesus is just flipping people's perspective, because in that moment, there is something more important, Jesus would argue. And that is forgiveness, reconciliation. And sometimes, and I'm just going to be honest about this, I think sometimes, particularly within the church, piety, holiness, you could even argue it, can actually kind of blind us from seeing the ways that we have offended others. Because as long as I'm right with God, then all will be fine. Now, we've got to make it clear, even in this passage, we can't force peace, okay? Some conflict will take time. But we can choose to be humble. Remember, this is about our heart. This is about the state of our heart. So when you are the offender, Jesus says, make peace your priority. Before you go and offer your gift, make peace your priority. Test yourself. Is there anyone who I have offended that I need to reconcile with? But there is a flip side to this as well. Because I don't know, maybe you're sitting here and going, yeah, I've offended so many people. Yeah, that's totally my world right now. Okay, I better go do that. But other people are on the other side of the coin. They're going, well, that's all well and good, Gavin, but I'm not the offender here. I am the offended. And we're going to talk about that too, because interestingly, the lesson is still the same. A little bit further on in Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 to 45, again, Jesus used this phrase, you have heard it said, but I tell you, right? So Jesus is flipping people's perspective on what the law is about. Verse 43, you have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. For he gives his sunlight to both evil and the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust alike. Now, this is a really interesting passage. It's actually a little bit controversial, because even just that phrase, verse 43, you have heard the law that says love your neighbor and hate your enemy. If you actually look in the Bible, there is no law that says hate your enemy. is a, just a really fascinating thing. People have argued that for a while. They're like, hey, what's he quoting there? There is no law that says hate your enemy. Well, interestingly, while that was a debate for a long time, some of you might be aware of the Essenes. They were the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, and you know, they dug them up and they found all those texts, and that's all good. Interesting, in the Essenian literature, it is in there. Which was obviously circulating around the time of Jesus. And so this law that they were talking about is kind of an extra-biblical law, something that was beyond Torah. So it was familiar, even though it isn't actually written in the Hebrew Scriptures as we understand them. So Jesus is saying, you've heard it say, the law that says love your neighbor, that is from Leviticus, and then hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. And so this is a message right here for the offended. And you might resonate with this a bit more. You're like, yeah, I'm in the offended category. Absolutely. Love that. These are the people who persecute you, right, that we need to be dealing with. Now, don't get caught up on that word enemy. It says verse there, hate your enemy, or but I say love your enemy. Now, in the Greek, it's exros, or enemy, and it's a personal word. But what we could really translate that is as adversary, okay? We don't want this to become a barrier to action. Sometimes we have conflict, say, with our partner or with our children and be like, well, they're not my enemy, so therefore I don't have to deal with this, right? Okay, I've got to wait for a real enemy. You know my real enemies? You know those three people? Like, do people have a list of enemies? I don't know if that's like a thing. But like, it's just like sometimes we can use that as an excuse to be like, oh, well, that only applies to the real bad ones, right? But in that moment, believe me, when you're having an argument with your child or with your spouse or where there's been conflict, in that moment, they are your adversary. They are your enemy. They are the person for whom the rub has occurred, right? And so this is what Jesus is talking about. Again, I just love how we try to find loopholes, but Jesus just kind of cuts right to the point and says, this is about the relationships you have with others. And even just this action that he prompts people to take, it's like, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Our natural response to something like that, especially to someone who has hurt us deeply and personally, is kind of like disgust. Like, come on, Jesus. Like, seriously, love your enemies, pray for your enemies. We actually don't want Jesus' instructions to be this simple. We want it to be more complex. We want there to be more disclaimers. Yeah, but not those particular enemies, right? But Jesus is clear. If someone is your adversary, if someone has offended you, if you are in the position of the one who is offended, then our response is to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. And this is an important distinction because we can twist this around as well. The instruction is not to pray about them, it is to pray for them. This is one of my favorite things. Oh yeah, I pray for my enemies. I pray that they will see the light. I pray that they would suffer. I pray, I pray, I pray. And we take this position as judge and jury. What Jesus actually says is he wants us to pray for them. I want to pray that they would thrive. I want to pray that their relationships would be blessed. I want to pray that they would experience goodness. I want to pray that they would, you know, rather than just addressing the point of conflict, that they would come to see the light. Jesus says, pray for them, not just pray about them. Now, of course, we don't have to pray for what they want to occur. That's really important as well. You know, if they're causing a significant destruction in our life, they're trying to, like, you know, hurt us, we're not going to pray that they would succeed, right? That's obviously not what Jesus is talking about. But we want to pray for their heart because, of course, any offense is a heart issue. And I know that, like, this rubs against me. Sometimes I'm reading articles in the paper and I'm just like, oh, you are not helping the world. Has anyone read an article recently where you've kind of been like, you are not helping the world with this. You are not helping anyone with this, right? I know that drives me nuts, right? And then I feel this ping of conviction because in that moment they are my adversary and they've offended me by their ignorance or whatever it might be. And I'm like, actually, Jesus wants me to pray that that person will be blessed. Not just that they will be corrected, but they will be blessed. Okay, that hurts, but I'm going to do that. Sometimes it can be a parent or a child. Sometimes we struggle to forgive because we kind of almost feel arrogant about it. It's like, I shouldn't have to apologize to my child. They're not informed. They don't understand the bigger picture, you know? And yet Jesus says, pray for them, love them. Because when we do, we reflect the heart of God, who causes the sun and the rain to fall upon both the righteous and the unrighteous. Jesus would go on to say, it's just like, hey, if you just love those people who love you, how are you different in the world? Like, seriously. Like, there's no difference. Like, love those who love you, even the tax collectors do that. Jesus is making it really, really clear that as Christians, as his followers, we are called to be different. And it's not just about obeying the rules. It's about embracing the life that God created us to experience from the beginning. I mean, even Jesus on the cross in Luke 23, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. It's important to recognize that Jesus doesn't say the persecution will stop. And I do need to put a disclaimer in here. If you are in a position where you are constantly being offended or you're being hurt or you're being abused in some way, right, sometimes there are necessary boundaries that need to get put in play in order to protect you, okay? This is not what Jesus was getting at here. But even if those boundaries need to occur, and sometimes they do, that does not stop the instruction for us to pray for those who persecute us. Or, if we are the offender, to go and reconcile with our brother or sister, even and with respect to any boundaries that are put in place. You see, whether you are the offender or the offended, Jesus says, make peace your priority. It doesn't actually matter which side of the conflict we are on, because either way there is heat. And if we don't address that heat, if we don't deal with that, if we try to cover it over, we're only going to burn our feet. And just a little bit of oxygen and a little bit of fuel, it stirs up just a little bit in that ground, that campfire, boom, and that's what happens to us too. And Jesus knows it. This isn't about us becoming more right. This is about Jesus digging deep into the heart of every human, saying, God knows what is best. You can do what you want with that. And the people did. Sermon on the Mount. Some people took it, some people left it. We have the same choice today. But Jesus is just identifying and saying, if you are someone who keeps digging up that story, if you are still carrying that heat, if every time that particular trigger happens, you are responding that way, then make peace the priority. Make peace the priority. You see, when conflict arises, and it will, you're no longer stuck anymore. You've actually got something that you can immediately do and should do. What I love about this is, in some respects, there is complexity to every conflict, but in this case, there's kind of no guesswork as to what is going to be important for the state of our heart. Jesus wants to protect our heart, and he gives us clear instructions. And so this isn't about me, Gavin, getting up here and giving you some wonderful insights. I'm literally just telling you what Jesus told the crowds, right? If you are the offender, prioritize peace by taking the initiative through an apology. If you are the offended, then pray for your enemy and love them. You see, we do this and we become peacemakers and we reflect the heart of God. And none of this is easy, by the way. No one said it was going to be. But if we don't deal with that heat, it'll rise up at one point or another. And so I suppose my question would be in response, what names come to mind? This isn't about digging through our history in this particular context. Sometimes you'll need to do that within the context of counseling or a pastor or friendship or whatever it might be. I'm not here to dredge up everything and deal with it now, right? But most of us, if we're honest with ourselves, there's going to be particular hurts that we are still carrying and names in our mind. Right, are people that either have offended us or maybe that we know that we have offended. And if we have been making excuses and saying, I'm just going to wait till this thing fades out over time, then Jesus says, actually, there's a better way. And so I would encourage you to pursue that better way. Don't let something simmer below the surface. God has something better for that relationship and something better for you. So let me pray. Jesus, we recognize that relationships can be hard. Sometimes we're misunderstood. Sometimes we're on edge and we say things we don't mean. Sometimes we're carrying hurt and that causes us to lash out against others. But God, as a community of faith, of people who trust you in your way, Jesus, we want to be distinctive. We don't want to be like the rest of the world who just loves those people who love them. And we want to be a people of forgiveness, who proactively forgive so that we're not carrying burdens that aren't ours. And so, God, we're going to do our part. We're going to do whatever we can to pursue peace. We know we can't fix everything. But, God, we want to be humble. We want to be proactive. And God, I recognize that for many of us there's a humility, certainly, in confessing our sins and confessing to those people and looking for forgiveness from those that we've offended. Lord, I also recognize there's just an insane level of humility required in praying for our enemies and loving them. That just doesn't make sense. And yet, God, your way is the best way. Because, Lord, when we pursue it, we discover the life that truly is life. We discover a freedom you created us to experience. We no longer are on edge waiting for something to reignite, but rather it has been extinguished. It is finished. And so, Jesus, we trust you. I want to pray, God, for those particularly who have to take a step of courage as a result of tonight. A name has come to mind. And Lord, it's going to take a step of courage as the offender or the offended. I want to pray, God, that that courage, Lord, would be realized. And that we would see your provision in those actions taken. Thank you that you're good, you're a loving Father, and we can trust your way. In Jesus' name, amen.